Hello and welcome to our latest Gate Drop podcast with the MXGP World Championship actions starting underway this weekend for round one in Argentina. We've already previewed the MXGP class, so now we'll take a look at the MX2 class and dive into some of the contenders and riders to look out for the year ahead. Along with me is Johnny McCready. Johnny, I think the first place to start is really after the dramatic season last year. I mean, it was probably the best racing out of any championship anywhere in the world, the MX2 World Championship, the show that Tom Vieira and Yago Gerch put on last year was just unbelievable, really. So I think there's no better place to start for Yago Gerch. And the main question is, will this be the year he can finally deliver an MX2 World title?
He should do. I mean, I was at Tampa Supercross and I was talking to Vial about that season, and even he was saying that him and Yago were pretty similar speed throughout the year, and the final was like sort of that sort of thing you'll never forget, and the drama of it. Interestingly, he said the pressure wasn't as bad really on the bike as it would seem off it, even though he was the one that actually made the mistake that cost Yago the championship. But the speed those two were going at the end of that season, only Benetton was sort of the one that was kind of shown, maybe not for the whole 30 minutes, but he could run that pace at times. And they might be the two guys really going for this championship. Yago, I think, has to start as favorite. I mean, when it comes to speed, we saw at Red Bull, he ran with Tomac in Tomac's best year of his career in America, and one of Tomac's best tracks with only 10 days on a 450. So I think that underlines how talented he is. And even Vial again, when speaking to him at Tampa, he said that actually gave him confidence. Yago's performance at Red Bull gave him confidence that he could be successful in America, because that showed that his level was on the level of Eli Tomac, roughly, on the outdoor level anyway. So I think Yago's pace, not a question, his ability, not a question. But even at this nation's the second moto, when he was going for the overall win, he had a tip over, he had a couple of tip overs when it really mattered. Finland, I think last year when he was leading, if he hadn't crashed there, I think he would have won the championship. That spiral, that pressure scenario. So for me, I think Gerch, although in the race there at Lierop, it was Kai De Wulff that won. And for me, he's the guy that if anyone's going to jump to that level consistently, it could be him. But it starts, I'm not sure, are going to be quite there like the two Yamahas, but I think Yago has to start as favorite. Can he limit the mistakes if he's feeling pressure? And the guy to put the pressure on might be his teammate, Thibaut Benestan, because he's a pretty special talent as well. But Yago, for me, Yago's an amazing rider. It's just, can he keep his head together in the big pressure moments? Speed-wise, he's amazing, and the way he rides a bike's fantastic. The only other thing with him is his last year. So he has to do it. He's going 450 next year. Again, that's a wee bit more pressure, and he probably should have won the title last year. But speed-wise, we saw last year, I mean, the speed those two were going was pretty incredible. So he has that in his locker. But I think Benetton might be the guy to pressure him.
Yeah, I mean, as you've said there, it's going to be his last year racing the MXGP World Championship. Already signed to be a factory Yamaha rider for 2024. So he knows this is the year he has to do it. And another thing is, this is probably the first year in his career he's going in as the favorite.
It's a
You know,
good
it's
point,
always been him and somebody else. So that's even more pressure to deal with. So if I'm Yago Gerch right now, I'm not even thinking about the championship. First half of the season, probably won't even think about the championship. Just think about the next race, think about the next moto. And if you ride the best that you can, okay, you might not win every race, but you're going to be winning races. And when you don't win, you're going to be top three, apart from the odd race where you crash. But I mean, everyone's going to crash. So I think he just needs to forget about all everything
Thinking,
else.
don't
Just,
think, just ride.
just don't, exactly. Just do that.
Nike,
And
Nike should
just do
sponsor him,
that.
just do
Yeah, just do it. Just go out,
it.
do it. Ride your motos. Very hard to do. But if he can do that, forget about everything else. We all know he's probably going to be the fastest rider there. Although I would say, you know, he's riding against a lot of younger riders. Give those guys another off season. They're obviously going to close the gap. You know, it's all the time in the sport. Somebody emerges that you don't maybe expect to be as quick. So, yes, A, he's favored, but B, winning a world championship is never easy, and C, these other guys are going to be trying to close the gap. and he's going to have to be on his A game and survive the season and try and avoid those mishaps that he had last year. But certainly in terms of raw speed and talent, he's the best there is in that class. So fingers crossed from his perspective, it can all go to plan this year and he can finally win that World MX2 title that he's been chasing for how many years now? 3 or 4?
I think he deserves it for his riding ability, the speed he has, especially after what happened to him last year. But he's not going to get the title because he deserves it based on brilliant moments from years past. He has to earn it.
Exactly.
And if you're Thibaut Benistone, do you try to put pressure on him even if you're practicing together? Do you start to play mind games? We saw at times he was almost getting in between, or you know, he wasn't necessarily letting Iago past halfway through the season, not that he should. But remember, there was a bit of debate about team orders and stuff. Now it's going to get really interesting because Benistone might be the guy, I would say DeWolf as well, who will come in here thinking they have a shot at winning a title. How will the team, inter-team situation go between the mechanics? How does the team manage that? How does Iago face having his younger teammates suddenly coming into form and being the guy that he's battling? And with Tom, obviously, they didn't really do much during the week. They were separate teams. Everything was separate. They saw each other at weekends. Benistone could be there every weekend, depending on where the training programs work. He's going to be in the same truck as them. It's going to be a very different dynamic. And if you're Benistone and you know Iago maybe has issues with pressure, at least that's what you're going to tell yourself, is he in a better position to try and press those buttons on Iago during the season if they both get off to a strong start? Could be something to keep an eye on as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, at this stage of the season hasn't even started yet. I don't think I'd be worrying too much about mind games. No, I think I'd just be worrying about trying to start the season.
I'm getting excited.
Yeah, you're getting very excited. Start the season well and then go from there. But what I would say is, you know, Benistone isn't going to be under anywhere near as much pressure as Iago Gertz because, you know, yes, he wants to go to America, but he's still going to be racing MX2GPs in 2024 before maybe going in 2025. So he's got 2 years to win this world title, and he will believe in his ability to challenge this year, but it's not a disaster if he doesn't win it.
He's everything to gain and nothing to lose. Whereas Iago's everything to lose and a world title that he feels he should have had last year to gain type thing. So for me, it's going to be interesting to see how that dynamic works.
Exactly. Another thing I would say is, as amazing as Iago is on a bike, I don't think he maybe has that fear factor that maybe a young Jeffrey Herlings, a young Jorge Prado, or a young Ken Roczen had. They were very, very mentally strong. And unfortunately, Iago, I mean, last year he was very, very unlucky. But, you know, he's had a few years trying to win this title and he still hasn't done it. And I don't think he would be as mentally strong as those guys I've just mentioned. So I think those other the guys racing him maybe won't fear him as much as they would one of those other riders. So if they start getting wins, you know, it could be a big confidence booster for them and then it's wide open. But Thibaut Benistone is him, Kaido Wolf. But I think we're forgetting about Simon Lagenfelder. I mean, he finished third in the world last year. I know he only won one GP at Mallory Basin, but consistently he was there.
Yeah, he's consistent.
A regular podium guy, but I think he will step it up over
speed,
this
though,
winter.
Does he have it?
I think this year, I think he will, because don't forget, he pretty much, you know, the bike last year wasn't even great for Vial, and
true.
He's elite. And I think the bike will be better this year, and I think another off-season. But then again, there might be a bit of pressure on his shoulders, which he's not used to, so can he deal with that? We've seen Matteo Guardini this time last year. He was expected to challenge for an MX2 World Title. Never really happened. Can Lagenfelder deal with that? That's a question mark. But I think if pressure doesn't get to him, I think he'll be there or thereabouts, because MX2 consistency near pays off more than it would in MXGP, because they're pretty wild in MX2 compared to MXGP. So if you're on the podium every week, win 3 or 4 GPs, that could win this title for all we know.
Yeah, I think those are probably the big three. We'll just go to Kai DeWolf here as well. Probably one of the most talented riders, naturally talented riders. Last year was slightly up and down. I think he got injured as well at one point. But we saw at Lommel what he can do. We've just seen at Lierop what he can do. He was good in the sand, but I felt his hard pack riding definitely improved last year a lot. And again, as the season went on, my issue with Kai is, can he get the consistent starts? He's bigger, taller than Yago taller than Benistow. If he can get the consistent starts, I expect him to kind of be there. It might be a year too early to really go for the title in terms of he doesn't have the experience of going for one if he's in the mix. But I think he needs the starts. I don't think he's going to come. Those Yamahas last year were consistently starting at the front more often than not. Guy was a bit hit and miss. Even in pre-season, he's been a bit on and off with the start. So I think he needs them. And then the more wins he gets, the more experience he gets. He's so young and so talented. I don't think getting the wins and podiums is going to be a problem once he gets going. But I think he's probably the third guy in line to go for the title. And I love watching him ride because he's so exciting on the bike. You can see his personality and desire with the way he rides. It's pretty cool. So I think he's going to be a thorn in the side, but he's also got a teammate who's looking really good in preseason, and that might spur him on as well. And obviously with Rowan, which for some reason he always seems to go on under the radar, but I think DeWolf has a very high ceiling. I'm not sure we've seen anywhere near to what his potential is going to be. He was the guy that even Jet Lawrence admits was able to beat him when Jet was in 85s coming up. So that's the sort of level Kai DeWolf has.
Yeah, Kai DeWolf, he certainly rides with his heart in his sleeve. In that respect, yeah. Kind of reminds me of Hunter Lawrence in that way. Yeah. You know, they both let out in the track and give it everything they have. I mean, last year he was third in the world until mm-hmm. he got, well, injured, but he actually got knocked down by
yeah.
a car that when he was cycling, so completely off track, wasn't even his fault. So we'll never know now if he would have been able to stay third, but he was certainly riding well, and he missed a lot of GPs, and when he came back, he needed time, I would say, to get to the front again, but he was riding well towards the end again. So I think for him, it's important to stay injury-free this year, last the season, and he'd certainly be a consistent top five guy. Will he win enough to challenge for the title? I think that, you know, he hasn't even won a GP yet, so
mm-hmm. I think he needs to try.
Yeah, one step at a time, exactly, and we'll take it from there. But yeah, I mean, this Nestan Husqvarna team, it's a hell of a team. I mean,
it's almost like often, the Yamaha team in MXGP,
it's not often that Husqvarna has a better lineup than factory KTM.
No.
This is where we are at the moment. I mean, if the way Lucas Conan is riding, and you know, Rohan was actually quite good for his first race back there, so the way they're riding, Kai DeWolf, maybe the first question will be try and make yourself Husky number one rider first.
The guy that's number one on that team will probably be the world title challenger, you would imagine, to the two Yamahas. So.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, Lucas Conan's coming in with no fear. I mean, people don't realize how quick this guy was riding at the end of last season in the MX250. I was at Lommel and he was just phenomenal. He was going 5-6 seconds
quicker than
anybody, and just unbelievable. And, you know, some guys, when they go up to MX2, they maybe struggle mentally. They maybe don't really believe they should be at the front of MX2. But as we know with the Conan twins, you know, their big goal is to go to America. So he'll probably win a GP and happy days and just worry about next week again. You know, I don't think I don't think I'll get to them of it all, because their dream is to go to America. So this is just a step in their careers, really. So I don't think they'll let that get to them. And Ron van den Moestijk just can't stay injury free, which is really annoying, because again, he's such a good talent. You love to watch Kai DeWolf ride, so do I, but I really like to watch Rowan van den Moestijk ride, because
he's very, very good,
very smooth to watch. Again, he had everything to be probably at least challenged for an MX2 GP World Championship. Probably not going to happen, because this is last year. He's been out of racing for over a year, so you know, I'm not expecting fireworks to start of this season. I would actually prefer it maybe if he started slow to build and then survive the season, mm-hmm. because you know, he has to put himself in a shop window to get an MXGP ride.
He should be good in a 450 though, so if he can do the job this year. Yeah, yeah, I think exactly. That's probably a main goal as well. I want to be world champion. It's be up there and show what you can do in a 450 potential anyway.
Exactly. But just on MX2, there's actually only three of the current MX2 GP riders that have actually only won a GP.
Good stat.
You know who the three are? I have another stat after.
Yago Gerts, Benistow, and
you should get the third one. You
see, Langenfelder.
Yep. They're the three. I'm expecting this year is
new GP winners.
New GP winners. And here's another stuff for you. There's only been two of the current GP riders that have held the red plate.
Oh, Yago Gerts and Simon Langenfelder.
Yep, because he won the first round last year.
Yeah.
So if somebody new can win the opening round in Argentina, they'll not only have won their first GP, but they'll also have the red plate for the first time in their career.
Lucas Coonan.
So,
honestly, could he go to the first GP, win the overall, and leave with the red plate?
And his rookie season and his rookie MX. Well, it's not his rookie MX2, right? I suppose he had, but it's
rookie season for sure.
Yeah, rookie season. Honestly, MX2 is so wide open. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if somebody like Adamo went and won.
Yeah, he's been looking.
Yeah.
The thing about Lucas, especially, we'll get on to Sasha later. I know he's your favorite Coonan. But the thing about Lucas is in the 125, like 2 years ago, they were riding the MX 125 and Lucas broke his collarbone at Matterley Basin, second version at round one. By the end of the year, he was the dominant rider in the class. Yeah. Go to EMX 250 last year, couple of rough rounds.
Didn't get a point at round one.
Figure it out. End of the year, dominant rider in the class. So now, not to say he would be the dominant rider in the class at the end of MX2, but I was thinking it'll take him the first half of the year. He'll be good, top 10, 5 to 10. By the second half of the year, he'll be podiums, top 5, maybe going for a race win here and there if things line up. But it's like he's almost taken a step. He's done that step over the winter. Now, I know he has to still deliver the results in a full class, but speed-wise, with his two teammates, he's probably seeing the speed. It's like he's taken that first half of his previous two seasons and done that development, and he's coming in on a top five level already. Now, he still has to do it, but to come out in pre-season with that speed is so impressive so quickly. And again, I suppose you have to remember that Sasha's been quick too. He's been sort of top three, top five. Now, he makes more mistakes. He's about half the height of his brother, so I don't think that helps if there is mistakes. He's more aggressive. But even his speed was good in comparison to the GP regulars. They're now on factory bikes. They're getting help from the likes of Joel Smith at KTM, good people around Lucas at Husqvarna. They've good teammates who are on the elite level. So they're seeing all this stuff for the first time, and they're so talented. But they're 16 still, maybe just turned 17.
Yeah, 16, I think. Maybe so 17, yeah.
They're really, really young. They've got teammates that are there seeing the speed. They've better bikes than they've ever had, and maybe that progression's coming quicker because of everything they have around them. And unfortunately for you, because you don't want them to go to America, speaking to Roger DeCoster in America, in Tampa, and he knows exactly who they are, and he's head of KTM over there, so it looks like they're already on the radar, at least of obviously KTM with the pit bar DeCoster connection, and Roger DeCoster's Belgian, so he's going to be keeping an extra eye out on them. On the rate they're going, they could be the new Lawrence brothers in America in a couple of years. America probably don't know who they are yet, but it's not going to take long. But like Jeff.
Yeah, America have no idea who the Coonan brothers are, but little do they know that if they get their way, they'll be there in 2025 racing in America. Whether that's Supercross or not, that's a different story, but they definitely want to be doing outdoors in 2025 in America.
For anybody that hasn't seen them ride, I mean, Sasha's really small, but with Solomon Lommel, you look like he should be on 80, and he's running the EMX 250 top three around Lommel, just leaping over them bumps with every sinew of muscle that he had in his small body to get jumping over those bumps. And I think he's maybe smoothed out, but Lucas has the height and the maturity and the smarts to, I think, deliver this year. It might take Sasha a year or two, especially with growing, maybe to calm down a wee bit, but Lucas right here, right now, as we look at preseason, looks ready to deliver in his first season straight away.
Yeah, what I would say on the Coonan twins is, I mean, if you go back 3 or 4 years ago, okay, they were highly rated in Belgium, but in terms of results, they hadn't really done that much. You know, if you look at Kaida Wolf, for example, in 85, you sort of knew he was destined for greatness. Yeah. The Coonan twins, you weren't really sure. Since they've signed for Bud 2 years ago, years ago now, the improvement's been crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And already to be in MX2 GPs, phenomenal, really, the improvement they've shown. Now, and Lucas, very calculated. I think he uses his brain a little bit more. Like what Paul Mallon says, Sasha wants everything done yesterday and just pins it. And he's actually already injured, so he's not even going to be racing Argentina.
Great.
So that's a bit of...
I was really excited to see him. Yeah. He probably went a whole shot and
went
absolutely mad.
Gets very good starts, which is a positive. But maybe just chill out a little bit. But I'm sure he'll get there because he's got the talent, that's for sure. Part of me thinks he should probably be an AMX 250 this year because that's the class where you learn all that stuff. But, you know, you can't turn down an MX2 GP factory KTM, right? So I do understand that. So, but on both of them, very good future ahead of them, especially Lucas, because he's got the speed and he seems to be very smart, more calculated, and he keeps it in two ways more. But yeah, it's going to be an exciting future for those two. That's for sure.
Yeah, and I think if Sasha can figure this crashing thing out and probably grow an extra couple of centimetres, the way he rides is pretty much like Ricky Carmichael, except Ricky Carmichael figured it out. So I think it's going to be a question of, can Sasha get a bit of Lucas and be smart in the right moments? Because of speed and aggression, if that all clicks and lines up and he's the strength and the physical ability to ride 250, he's going to create an intensity and from lap to lap that's going to be very hard for a lot of riders to replicate if he can stay on two wheels.
Yeah,
the
well,
next
I mean,
couple of years.
He rides at 100/105% every lap, every corner, every
sometimes
race.
110.
So sometimes riders, you know, whenever they need to take a step back and go back to racing to 90%, they're just not as good. So that's kind of why I wouldn't have minded him in the MX250, because he maybe would have been able to find the balance. But MX2, he's going to get good starts whenever he comes back. And he's in the thick of it. He's just going to be
and with the good starts, you've got the adrenaline
again.
And he'll see Lucas and it'll be like, I can beat Lucas. And then it's going to be go.
Yeah, so I just hope whenever he comes back, you know, somebody in his corner, hopefully Joel Smets, Antonio Crowley, very smart, intelligent people, can just tell him results don't really matter that much. Just go out.
He's Stefan and Harry there as well. I mean, he's so many world championships and Jeffrey Herlings. It's like knowledge central over at KTM. Yeah. Pit Barra knows about winning races as well. And actually, Pit was on the Wilder side. So if anyone can probably knows exactly what's happening to Sasha, it's probably Pit Barra. So in terms of Dirk Grubel as well, has been there and seen it on the technical side and management side. So I think that's probably a good thing why he's in that team. He's all the knowledge that he needs around there. Obviously, he has to listen, but I think he's all the tools to be pretty amazing. It's just, can these guys with 30-odd world championships between them get through them? And if he listens to them, he's going to be pretty special, I think. But on Belgian motocross, Texas to Liam Everts, the Belgian talent all of a sudden is really blossoming. Iago Gertz led the way. Liam's steadily improved the last couple of years. The Koonin's coming behind him. Where do you see Liam this year? Again, similar position to Adamo, really. First year on the KTM. And they say it's steady progress. Last couple of years sort of earned their way into these teams. But now it's your factory rider. Seventh isn't really what they're looking for. They're wanting top results. But I think even with KTM, you mentioned Husky. They're maybe the lead team this year. And it's a development year maybe for the KTM guys. But still, they're going to be looking results, and it's about delivering that as a factory KTM rider now for Liam Everts and Andrea Adamo.
Yeah, exactly. I think Liam, I mean, last year was his rookie season, but he got injured, so he didn't even last the full season. So I think it's important to stay injury-free and learn more about MX2.
Especially
racing.
In the first corner of the first round, remember, he got taken out of Matterley, that's what killed him.
Yeah.
But he came back well.
And I think he got injured off that again, did he not?
He had a couple of niggly stuff, but he rode the end of the year because he was at his nations. But, I mean, he was good when he got going.
Yeah,
you know,
he had a couple of motos in fourth, I think he finished. So, and obviously the bike, they were struggling with the bike last year, so
Lomely
the bike looks a lot better. Yeah, the thing with Liam is, as the track gets rougher, he excels more, so at the rough, real gnarly stuff, he should be knocking on the door for maybe a couple of podiums, maybe. I wouldn't be surprised to see him on the podium, but I think he'll mostly be a solid top 10 guy, maybe a couple of podiums, and then in around the top five. I think that's how he'll do. But I have to say, Andrea Adamo, he's got me excited, I have to say. In Italy, I think you were in Tampa, so you missed
But I got lots of messages about how
My
fast
goodness,
Andrea Adamo was.
I was completely was
when I woke
so
up.
Good. Yeah, I was like, I thought Adamo might have been quite good, but to be that speed already, I mean, he was really, really good. Okay, Benny Stott was still quicker than him, but Adamo, a sprint speed to pull away, and then to hold on, like the wind didn't even really matter that much. But you know, he didn't really make any mistakes, and Benny Stott closed him down. So I'm really looking forward to him. I think he could surprise people this year. I really do.
Yeah, I think those two are going to be interesting. First of all, because they're in that factory team. And then it's about how good can the results be? Can they get the early top fives, early podiums, early wins? Or is it going to be a just chill out, progress, and by the end of the season, that's where KTM expecting to be? I think for Adamo as well, he's maybe in a situation like the Coonans were. Liam has obviously had Stefan guiding him, so he's had access to that knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Although I see now he's working with Tony Caroli, so again, that's another thing that's going to really help him. But Adamo's going to have all that access as well. A full factory bike. And they're both pretty young. I think they're both 17, 18,
yeah,
18 19 or so. Yeah. So they're still teenagers. They've still plenty of time. They've a good 5 years in this class yet. And I think KTM are going playing the long game a wee bit.
Yep.
With Sasha especially, and also Liam and Andrea. And Andrea might, bit like the Coonans have in the last 2 years, even over this winter, what seems to be from how excited you've been and what you've seen, that Adamo's kind of already made a step.
Looks like it, for sure.
And the season hasn't even started. Again, you have to get the results. But if you're there already, then you're getting starts. Then you can learn quicker how to run with the elite guys like Iago and Benetton, the Wolf. So it's sort of a project at KTM, and it'll be interesting to see who can sort of rise up the fastest there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really looking forward to it. Well, you know, when these two guys, when Liam and Adamo were announced, you're kind of like, strange lineup for factory KTM, because you're so used to them having one of the title favorites.
Yeah, Prado,
it's not like
Jonas,
that this year. As you say, they're playing the long game. But, you know, if you give one of these guys a good couple of first rounds in this sport, anything can happen. So
it's kind of feel like they could be one of them, probably. Everett Adamo could be the Langenfelder of last year.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. I think that could be it. Adamo, I mean, his improvement's been pretty amazing when you think about it. I mean, 3 years ago, I think he was racing the MX250. I think he got a podium at the first round, but then he missed the rest of the whole championship. And then the year after, he signed to race MXGPs, and you were kind of thinking, you haven't even done much in the MX250 yet. But the first year in MX2, he was solid. You know, he was knocking on the door for top 10. And then last year, he pretty much exploded. I know he was only 10th in the championship standings, but I think his riding was better than that. And he got a podium, which is probably his best day of his life so far. But I wouldn't be surprised to see him being a consistent podium guy this year, especially if that preseason was anything to go by.
He has been consistent every year. And actually, when you say he finished 10th in your, well, at least in my head, you think he was around a 5-8 guy, probably should have been the challenger because he had a lot of those results. Mm-hmm. So if he can transfer the consistency to this season and up the speed, then he's KTM of a very solid, at minimum, solid rider in the hands who could go on to achieve a lot in this 2023-2024.
Exactly, it's going to be exciting, and Italy will be hoping for another superstar in her hands. One rider that really intrigues me, and I think probably a question mark in terms of you don't really know what to expect, Mikael Harrop. I think last year it was a big year for him to sort of turn his career around, because he didn't have a great 2021 season, but I have to say 2022 was definitely a step in the right direction. He got a couple of podiums, I think. In Portugal, he was fantastic. He had the speed maybe to win that weekend.
Yeah, he was really
just when Indonesia, he had a couple of DNFs, and then maybe the bike reliability let him down a few times, which wasn't necessarily his fault. So even though he was sixth in the World Championship last year, I think, again, the riding was probably top five. What are you expecting from him this year?
Probably more of the same. I mean, he hasn't got the factory. And I don't even necessarily think it's the bike, although you need the reliability.
Yeah, I think the bike's fast.
The speed-wise, he's got the bike. But, I mean, Steve Dixon does a really good job to be able to produce a bike that can run the factory riders. But if you're in there with Everett Smets, Crowley, Hurlings, and Dirk Grubel and everyone that's there, that's probably going to bring you on, if you can withstand the pressure, obviously. So I think he doesn't have that going for him, but on the other side, he sort of had that when he was really young. So he's been exposed to it. The results weren't quite there. He was maybe too young to be able to take full advantage of it. I sort of expect more of the same from Harrop, because, as you mentioned, Husky have three riders, KTM have three riders now, so that's six. Your two at Yamaha, we haven't mentioned Elzinga. He's the third guy there.
Oh, yes.
Bonacorsi, is he's
MX, no, yeah, I'm actually, yeah,
he's back to MXT50. Yeah. You're going to have Kevin Horgmo, and I expect Kevin Horgmo and Haar probably to be they battled a lot last year, quite similar a lot of times, and I think it might be the same this year. I think they'll be in that mix. I sort of expect around the same, in and around battling for that top five podiums. Yeah, wouldn't surprise me, but I think it's hard for Haar to do a lot better just in terms of, because there's going to be so many factory riders next year.
Yeah.
Can you beat them consistently all the time, not make mistakes, have the bike not make mistakes? I think it's going to be difficult. Sixth, if he gets sixth again this year, to me, that's going to be very, very good again. But expect him to be fast, certainly.
Yeah, I don't know. I think like people maybe underrate Harp a bit. He's still only 20 years old, I believe, as well. I honestly wouldn't be that surprised if he won a couple of GPs this year, because when he's on it, he's really on it. It's just, you know, you might not get that level every single week. But I mean, the way he raced to Portugal last year, I was gobsmacked at the speed of him that weekend. So I think with another off-season with Dixon too, that'll probably help matters, because he's had a lot of teams over the last couple of years. And I think he's at a place now, Steve Dixon obviously believes in him and sort of lets him do whatever he wants. So I think that's pretty good that way. So he could surprise people, I think. You mentioned Horgmo there. I think it's a really big year for him. Very, very solid last year. Very, very consistent. I think out of the top six last year, he was the only one not to win a moto, but he was fourth in the World Championship standings. So I think that's
close a lot of times.
Very,
kept losing the front wheel a lot the first half of the year as well, so that cost him points. But
for him, he's got the pressure of putting himself in the shop window for an MXGP ride in 2024, because obviously he ages out at the end of this year. So it's going to be interesting. I think if Horgmo can do similar to what he done last year, I think that'll be a good season, to be honest, because other riders are going to step up as well. And but it will be interesting.
For Harrop, is his goal to pretty, if he does the same as he did last year, Iago and all's moving out, a couple of guys are moving up, does that give him the opportunity to go back into factory again, a factory Yamaha, KTM, Husky, something like that? Is that sort of, in order to be a world title contender, do you think he needs to go to a factory team and this year would be the year to show you can do it again, two good years in a row? Or has he got the bike and the package at Dixon to be in the next couple of years a world title contender on that team?
I just don't see where he would go, to be honest, in a factory team, because he's already been at FNH, he's already been Husky, which was an Austrian brand, and as we've touched on earlier, KTM and Husky already have young teams. So where would he go? I mean, I suppose Yamaha.
Yamaha's the only one I was thinking of.
Potentially, that would maybe be the only one.
I think if you put Harrop on Yamaha, he can win races.
Yeah, and Yamaha have Bonacorsi, so there'll be a decision there to be made as well. He's young. Yeah. I think, to be honest, Dixon, I think the bike's quick enough. The reliability of it now and again, maybe let him down, potentially. But you have to say, Dixon's doing an unbelievable job. I think this is his 36th year or something in the Grand Prix paddock, and he's the last of the British team managers. So credit to him. He clearly loves the sport and loves what he's doing. But to go back to your question, I think the bike, in terms of speed, could potentially maybe win a world championship with the right rider. And Harb could be that right rider. I don't think this year, but I think maybe when Gert's moves up. But then it's tough because there's so many guys coming through, and you've got guys like Benny Stad. So it's not going to get any, it might not get any easier than this year. But Harp has got a lot of talent, which I think some people forget about just because of a bad 2021 year. But it'd be nice to see him, you know, remind the rest of the world really what he can do.
Last year was a big breakthrough because he always had the speed, but then was inconsistent or injured.
Yeah.
I think last year he showed the speed to get these podiums. And when he wasn't maybe at his very best level, he was still good. You know, he was still in the top 10, well in the top 10.
Yeah.
So his bad races weren't that bad, and his good races were very, very good. And you started to see him really grow.
In fairness, I think that's all he sort of had to do last year, though, just to get back the, you know, in steps. You know, last year, he just couldn't afford another year like 2021 last year. And thankfully, he didn't. so it reminded people that he has what it takes to get on the podium. It's just whether enough he can win enough and be a regular podium visitor to challenge for this title, which is going to what it's going to hinge down to. But again, it wouldn't surprise me if he came out flying on Argentina. I think at the start of 2021, he got a podium in Matterley Basin, but then it all sort of went downhill after that.
Yeah, he loves Matterley Basin. Fortunately for him, he's to wait all year because it's the last round. Yeah. What about Rick Elsinger, factory rider this year, AMX2 champ? Can he raise his game another level? And the advantage, I think that's obviously Harrop. He's had that before, but maybe he's reaching his peak years. If he was in that Yamaha team riding with Benistone and Gert, I think that would bring him on. Is that going to bring Elsinger on? Do you think he has that potential to go to the next level?
Well, I think for Elsinger, he's under zero pressure. He's the third rider of the team, and his two teammates have all that pressure, mostly Iago as well. But so for Elsinger, it's just important to get used to racing MX2 GPs. I know he has had health issues in the past, so he's going to have more races to deal with. And not only more rounds, but also three races on a weekend now. So I think he just needs to adapt to all that and hopefully survive the season without a big dip, because he seems to be very, very quick and then he maybe dips. So if he can keep a good level and consistent throughout the whole season, I think that would be a good season for him. Because even in the MX250 last year, he rode really well at the start of the year. He was pretty much the quickest guy. And then he sort of dipped towards the end of the season. And
get
but it's nice to see him get this opportunity, because it was 2 years ago he told us that if he didn't get a ride to Pedham, you know, he was going to walk away from the sport. So it just goes to show, don't give up. If you're maybe a season away from quitting, always give it that extra season, and you don't know what's around the corner. And there is another rookie I'd like to mention, is Cornelius Tundell. Again, he was very, very quick at the start of last year in the Fantic. And again, he had health issues. I think he got COVID. But he's with a team there, SM Action. They're now KTM, that are very, very good at developing young talents. And he'll be hoping that he's the next one in that production line and going to that team and turning into factory riders. He's certainly one to watch out for as well.
Right. Who else is on your radar that could surprise people? We saw Joel Ritzy at Hawkstone. If you cut 2-3 years ago, certainly on the British scene, he was the guy, he was the next up and comer. His development has probably been slower than what, if you're coming from the UK viewpoint, you maybe expected. But he looks pretty at home on this Yamaha, Riley Yamaha. He was riding very well at Hawkstone. Now, he didn't really have much competition except Jack Nicholls. He was absolutely pinning it. Former MX2 podium guy in the MX2 class, but it was a mixed race. And in the super final, and when he got the good starts, Ritzy showed a lot of speed. He was battling the likes of Sean Simpson. So I think he's going well, but where do you see him fitting into MX2 this year? And any others like him that are slowly working their way up the class that could have essentially a breakthrough season in 2023?
Yeah, well, MX2 is fast. There's a lot of fast riders. If Ritzy can be a consistent point scorer, I think that would be good. And then on his good days, top 15, I think it should be pretty happy to have something to work on. And obviously, at the moment, obviously his teammate's injured, Håkon Fredriksson. But when he comes back, he's going to be fast if he can get the starts as well. But that might help Ritzy as well, though, if he can, you know, put the laps in with him as well. That might bring him on a bit too, instead of just riding around, you know, at the practice tracks on his own as well.
Anyone else?
Camden McClellan. He's going to be his rookie year, JM Racing. JM Honda Racing, so he's going to be Brent Van Donnick's teammate. My advice should be go out and do plenty of laps with Brent, because he's obviously riding well at the minute. And
eat whatever he's eating.
That'll bring him on. I think with Camden is, in the MX250, he might not blow you away with speed, but very solid, very consistent. Got quite a lot of podiums last year, if I remember rightly. So
he sort of sneaks up on you because, as you say, he's consistent. He doesn't always get the best starts. And even if he does, he maybe makes the odd mistake because he's maybe not used to running the pace, but he generally gets there, whatever, you know, he makes it happen eventually.
Yeah.
And so MX2, it could be the same. This year could be a building year and he'll break out rides here and there. So probably another one of those long-term riders over the next 2 or 3 years could really start creeping up the standings.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think this year is just all about building his rookie season. He's always kind of been a small burner, especially on the 250, but we do have to remember, I mean, he's an AMX 85 champion. That don't give them titles away for free, and he actually beat Kaido Wolf that day, so certainly got talent.
Who else?
I'm intrigued to see how David Brazoras does sign him with the FNH Kawasaki team. I mean, he hasn't had a very good preseason, so the less said about that, the better. But I think he's a very, very hard worker.
Yeah.
So I think that's good. You know, he'll work hard to achieve his dreams, and I think that's what the FNH Kawasaki team like. They like riders that will put everything into it.
Mark DeRover seems Mark to be a pretty good trainer.
As long as you're
on the same wavelength,
yeah.
He seems to get, like, look what a Horrible did last year. He seems to be able to extract potential out of riders. So Brazos could be another one of those riders where he can just keep pulling the potential and seeing how good and again, confidence. You know, if you've Brazos and he gets, might just need one good start, one good result, one good qualifying time where he really believes he's that good, gets the bike sorted, trusts Mark DeRover, you know, listens, believes what he's saying, that could all work to his benefit as the season goes on.
Yeah, exactly. And I think he was maybe one of the older riders in the MX250 class last year, because I think that was his third year in the class. So for him, it was the right move, I think, to go to MX2, you know, before he gets too old, and then he might only have a year or two. At least, I think he's 20 or 21 now, so he'll have a couple of years at least. And like I say, a hard worker with Mark DeRover guiding him, hopefully that can help him. But it might be a slow start to the season. That would be the only thing. But it's just a bit building for him, I think. And another Spaniard, Iago Martinez, he's signed with Racestar KTM. Again, he's a rookie season. He actually aged out of the MX250, so he had to go to MX2. So it's nice to see he got a ride, actually. And he's quick on his day as well.
So does anyone beat Iago for this title, or are we going Iago to win it?
My heart says Iago. My head isn't sure yet. Ask me after 4 or 5 rounds. What do you think? I think he will do it this year.
Iago wins it.
I think he will do it this year, because if he doesn't, it's a complete disaster and he might never get over it.
He has.
Like that, can't win.
Is the experience and the speed. So I think unless something disastrous happens, he's. Injury always scares me a wee bit with Iago. A couple of years ago, remember he got the knee injury at the start of the year, and he started off slow, and the next thing we know, took that championship, because that was in Vial, was injured as well. So when the opportunity presented itself for Iago that season, you wouldn't say it was his fault, but again, something went wrong, even though he was good enough once he got over the injury. Last year, the opportunity was there again. He'd done everything right to put himself there, couldn't quite get it done. The very end, you say he's a bit unlucky, and I'm a wee bit afraid that sort of bad luck or situational things that seems to happen to Iago might happen, strike again. Your Benetton kind of reminds me of Renault from 2 years ago. But I think he'll get it done. I'd have to be pretty happy for him, because he's been through quite a lot mentally and with injuries and stuff the last 2 or 3 years to come so close and to be so good and never be a world champion. I think hopefully they'll go into 2024 and MXGP as the MX2 world champion from 2023.
I'm going to say yes, because he's too good not to win an MX2 GP world championship.
That was
the so final answer.
That was more concise, but basically what I was trying to say. Right, that's our MX2 preview show done. Annie, thank you, and we'll all get ready for Argentina. And again, as we mentioned, MXG, keep our fingers crossed that there's no big injuries. Rowan van der Moestijk will probably be doing that too and watching that wave section this year. So hopefully the track is pretty safe and there's no big crashes. But as we just mentioned there, Iago's the favourite, but there's guys knocking on the door and there's a lot of young teenagers signed by KTM and Husky that are looking very, very promising. So let's see the progress they can make. And don't forget about the Koenigs. I think 6 weeks into this season, you're probably going to know at least Lucas's name. Oh, Sasha might part right now. But anyway, he'll come good anyway, won't he, Andy?
Oh, eventually, yeah, for sure.
So, right, there's the seal of approval. Right, that's us. We'll speak to you again soon. Enjoy the new season.
Ciao.